down, man. This is number what, 15?
Mm-hmm.
We are rolling. And, you know, we're going to talk to y'all about the lockdown because we think we're going to do something with it. We talked about it on the show. We talked about maybe turning it into a Patreon, and we're kind of leaning that way, you know, after maybe the show 300. So we don't want to blindside you because we know people love the lockdown. So we're just hoping that maybe some people can help out and do, you know, with a Patreon. And if the Patreon goes bad and nobody gives us any money, then we might just do it for free. I don't know.
Who knows? It's all a mystery.
Exactly. So this week, man, we got a hot, hot, hot one, man. We're doing one of my favorite movies, and I know Tiff loves this movie as much as, if not more, than I do. The Fifth Element, man, 1997, PG-13, 2 hours, 6 minutes, action-adventure,
sci-fi. That's kind of crazy that it's PG-13.
Well, it's good.
But I get it. It's not quite R. It's just not. It feels like there should be something between a 13 and an R, right?
Yeah, like a PG-16 or something like that.
Yeah.
We got a little bit more death and destruction and stuff. But, you know, so, you know, when I was a kid, it wasn't no 13. So it was either PG or R. So it was wide open, you know?
Big gap.
Oh, yeah, big gap. So let's see. With a colorful future of a cab driver unwillingly becomes a central figure of a search for a legendary cosmic weapon to keep evil and Mr. Zorg at bay. That's the what you call him. But this stars, man, Bruce Willis, Mila Jovovich, and this was Mila before she was a franchise killer, you know. Mila was 19 years old when she did this movie, and this is she said this was her first a movie, but it wasn't true because I
saw in Run Lola Run.
She was in Joan of Arc, which was I thought was a phenomenal movie. But she said this was the first good movie she was in.
I know.
Well, you know, she can say shit like that. She married to the director. They just make movies and make her the star, and they're terrible movies, and they just keep making them. Anyway, man, off of Mila, one of my favorite actors of all time, Gary Oldman, is in this.
Yes.
Ian Holm.
He is awesome.
Is in this. Chris Tucker was not his first role, but his first major motion picture, and he just blew it out the water. Luke Perry had such a small role in this.
So when I'm watching this movie, uh-huh. Not to interrupt your
uh-huh. By list all means.
Of people, his name is in the opening credits, and I thought, I have seen this movie tons of times. Luke Perry.
You forget about him.
And then I realize he's the very, very, like, it's not even worth mentioning.
It's such a tiny, tiny role. And I don't know if that's what he wanted to do. You know, 90210 was pretty much an over thing at this point. It was, I think, 1997. And, yeah, I mean, just a tiny, tiny little insignificant role, you know? And so
it's more like a cameo. Like, these days, I feel like it wouldn't even have been credited almost.
Oh, no. That's definitely a cameo. I think it would have been credited because he had speaking lines and stuff like that, you know. So
he did speak. Yes,
yeah,
you're right.
It would have been credited, but yeah. So Byron James, man, I used to love him back in the 80s and 90s and stuff. He had a role in this. Tiny Linster. We know him from, he used to play Zeus. Debo. Debo was in the house. Lee Evans. And I'm trying to think, is anybody else worth mentioning? Probably not. No, that's good enough. Anyway, man, so many people in this damn movie. It was 1997, Tiff, and I went to go see this movie on a whim. It wasn't getting any major play. Nobody was talking about it. I went in the movie theater full of nerds who scowled at the screen, mad as hell. And there was your boy sitting in the middle. Wah, 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 just laughing at every damn thing and having a ball. And I know everybody in there hated my guts because they didn't like this movie. Nobody in that movie theater. Some people walked out, and when it was over with, this was garbage. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, it's so good. Oh, my God. I mean. So, man, let's get it on. Before we get rolling heavy duty, let's hit one word. What we got? One word.
Outrageous.
I'm going to say spectacular.
Yeah.
Love this movie. And I'm going to be objective. The movie has its problems. It's not a perfect movie, but it's so goddamn good. and it holds
up. I just refuse. Okay, I have read things that say that this is like the quote-unquote best worst sci-fi movie that ever was made.
I disagree.
I think it's one of the best movies. Yeah. One of the best. It's so good.
Yeah, where's that worst shit come from?
It's done on purpose.
Yeah, where's that worst shit come from? It's terrible. Who, you know, get the hell out of here. So the company that did the special effects for this was James Cameron. He was trying to pull a George Lucas and make a ILM type of production company. And this is one of the ones they did. Now, some of the stuff looked really bad, but it's 1997 bad. You know, so at the time, it was fine. Shit, you know.
We forgive you.
Right. And shit, not everything could be Star Wars, y'all. You know, I always say that, just, you know, not everything.
So I think we would be remiss.
What's that?
If we did not mention that Luc Besson, the guy who made this movie, also made that movie that we saw that we were all very disappointed with.
Oh, Valerian. We thought it was
Valerian.
We thought it was the Fifth Element Part 2. You know, we did.
You let us down.
We wanted it to be too. So bad. So bad.
You broke my heart.
Yes, director Luc Besson. So yeah, he did the professional, man. He did the professional.
He did. Leon. He's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, man, let's get it rolling. So let's hit those spoilers. So movie starts in the past. We just talk about Luke Perry. He's, you know, in the middle of the desert. And if I can say anything that I love about, it's so much I can say. I'm just going to say it as we go. First of all, I'm just going to mention the score. Eric, what's his name? Eric Sina. Awesome. 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 The score of this movie is so progressive. So out there, so worldly, there is not a mistake at all in any of the score. And without the score, this is Star Wars to me. Without the score, you would never have a Star Wars. You would never have a Jaws or Indiana Jones without the score. In this movie, it's the same way. The score is one of the characters. It's so good, Tef.
From I would agree.
The serious music to the poppy music. It's just all good. So they're in a desert, and they're in Egypt, in a pyramid, and they're doing their thing. And the guy is, looking at the hieroglyphs. And I love the Aziz Light line. It never gets old to me, you know. Just Aziz Light is just so great. So they bring them, you know, they bring the kids, bring them water, and then these aliens land. You know, and the father comes up, and he sees what they're gonna do, so he's gonna poison them, you know. And I'm like, damn, dude, you know. Priest, come poison them. You know, they seen too much, Tiff. So
early days.
The aliens land, man, in a spaceship, and it's one of these things that this thing does well is that it doesn't look like a spaceship. What does it look like? It looks like a big brown Sunday or something. But you know, it's a spaceship, and it lands. And I always wanted to know. I wonder what happened to the kids in this. Because he killed the
he does get trapped in there too, right?
No, not the father, not the priest.
No. You said the kids, right?
But you got Aziz, you got the other kids, and it was a bunch of kids right outside sitting on the stoop, you know. But then this thing land, the father murders, you know, the professor, and I don't know what even happens to Luke Perry. Does he die? You know?
Yes, he gets killed.
He gets killed, right? So what about the kids? Do they got to go too? Did they see too much?
I don't think they ever showed that. Maybe it was just, you know, not important.
No, they didn't show it. But I thought about it last night. You know, I watched it last night. I was
when
like,
when you watch a movie enough times, you start to think about the little things.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, what about them children? So anyway, you know, you got these aliens, something that you never seen before, you know, and these big old round things. And the design of this thing is just awesome, Tefobot. You know, and then the voices. You know, they look like bad guys, Tiff. You know.
Yes, but they're very gentle.
Now, life is only important, you know. It's like, okay. So they give him the key, and the priest stands out, and he's, you know, I will, you know, protect your destiny, blah, blah, blah. What are you thinking with all this, Tiff? Because, Tiff, this opening scene is out there.
Yeah, I love it. If you look back on, so the first time you watch it, you might not, you know, 100% understand, but I actually really, one of my favorite things in science fiction is the Secret Order,
the Illuminati
that have been going on for years and years and years, and they protect a divine thing or whatever. So this is the formation of a Secret Order,
right? And you know, they did a really good job with the professor looking at the hieroglyphs explaining the plot of the movie. You know,
and it doesn't feel like you're like. it doesn't feel like you're being
schooled.
Right. You're just like, oh, this feels natural.
Yeah. He's like, there's a perfect being. There's a perfect being that stands in the middle. And there's here stands five elements. You know, and this is the four elements. This is the fifth element. And it was like, oh. And they did it so quickly without bothering because it had other things going on, you know. And boom. Quickly, we're in the future. I mean, right?
Oh, far in the future.
Yeah, not even 300 years. You know, we way in the future. I can't even remember what time it was.
2263.
So about 1,000 years, because he said it was the thing comes every 5,000 years, right?
Correct, to
kill the Earth and kill all life. And so now we're in the future, man. And oh my God, I remember being introduced to the president. Originally, and for a hot moment, I got angry, you know, because mm-hmm. I took my science fiction seriously at this time, and I didn't know this was a funny movie at this mm-hmm. point. I'm sitting in the theater and I'm watching it, and in walks Zeus, man, you know, Debo, you know, and he can barely talk, you know, his speech pattern is very heavy, you know. You know, hello, this is the president, you know, I don't want an incident, you know, and it's just like, huh. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, oh, this is going to ruin it. And I think after about a minute of seeing him on screen, I was like in love. Like, this is so good. He's the epitome of a political idiot, you know, and it just played it so good. I mean, how did you feel about him?
No, I guess when I saw this movie, I had, like, information.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is working for me.
Okay, so, you know, I was blown
and
away.
And I fucking love Vito Cornelius.
Vito Cornelius. So, right. It's so cool. He says, like, you know, so they try to destroy this evil, this big ball, right, that just came mm-hmm. out of nowhere. And they're sending all these nuclear bombs, and it just keeps getting bigger. And he told them, one of the, I think the general was John Neville, the one that got, you know, he was like, stutter, come to me. You know, he's like, well, I'm about to kill it. I'm about to kill it now, Mr. President. Yeah, that was your boy from, what was the name of that? Munchausen, right? Wasn't that him, John Neville?
Munchausen?
Yeah, he was in that movie.
I don't even know what Munchausen is.
Yeah, Baron Munchausen, that wasn't that your film?
Oh, Baron von Munchausen? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, shit, okay. All right, Tim, we're going to ignore that one. Let's keep going. So anyway, man, it grows, and he tells him, look, he stands up, and this is something else the movie do. Oh, my God. The announcements from the disembodied voice that happens all over this movie. It's so mm-hmm. good. And this is something else that Luc Besson does really good, who also actually wrote this when he was in high school, and he said it was terrible. What? He wrote it in high school. He said it was terrible. It wasn't what he wanted. He rewrote it. He kept rewriting it. And he wanted to do this movie ever since he was in high school.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, labor of love, right? And, yeah. You know, and patience. And so what happened was that what he does – it's something like Steven Spielberg did really well in like Jaws and stuff, how he had different conversations going, but you can understand everything everybody's saying. But that's not what he does here. Luc Besson tells a story with different scenes happening, even conversations going in circles, posing a question, answering a question. And he starts that in this. You know, there's Vito Cornelius, there's the president, there's the, you know, the thing blowing up. And, you know, it's just, it's really, really good to. So he tells him he has 20 seconds to, you know, say what he got to say. And he actually takes 22 seconds to do his speech telling him what evil is. I thought that was so cool. So they can't kill it. They throw the priest out. I was like, damn. That's it. So while this was happening, what those marauders, they like the race we saw at the beginning was coming across the border, like with a stoplight or a force field. They cross, and then these warriors and these two jets come, and they blow up the thing. It crashes into the moon, and they say they're lost. There's no need for the priest no more. They throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing we see, they say that we have a survivor. And I was like, oh, somebody's going to be messed up. Blew my mind when it came in. I didn't even know what the hell that thing was, Tiff.
I know. When I watched it, I was like, is it just a blob? But it's, I guess, a hand.
It's a hand on the suitcase. And I, you know, it took me watching it a couple times to realize that, too. And they said, we have a survivor. And I'm like, whoa. So the performance of this doctor at this clinic.
I fucking love this doctor.
Don't you? It's so good. It is so good, man.
He loves science.
if you ain't never believed that in your life, you would believe it watching this dude. He's so excited, you know? And so he's talking about how it's a perfect bead and, you know, it's never looked this good. And so they reanimate this person, thermal bandages, and the music is so good when they do this. It's just has and
they,
you like.
They keep saying, it's very important. They keep saying him.
Yeah. Yeah. It turns him. Out it, the perfect being is Mila Jovovich with orange hair and yes. Half naked. And funny enough about that orange hair, man. So they dyed that hair when she first, you know, they first it was blonde and then it was orange. Luc Besson wanted to be blonde, I mean, orange to represent fire. Apparently, the ladies who was doing the dyeing didn't know what the hell they was doing and her hair ended up falling out.
What?
Toward the end of the movie, it's a big wig, you know? So I was like, damn, wow, she could laugh about it. So anyway, so they reanimate her, and then she starts speaking this language. And it's so fluid. You know, it almost seems real. Turned out, that's a language that they actually, Luc Besson actually invented using what? Other languages. He created about 400 words, and they used to call each other on the phone every night speaking a language, like, so she can learn it, like, for a couple months. And
that's really crazy.
Ain't that crazy? But if you listen to it, you know gibberish when you hear it. You know, when you just... You know, blah, 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 you know, but she was saying words like metavoy and blah, blah, blah. I was listening like, damn, this yeah, it's pretty good. It's just like that Klingon, you know?
Yeah.
So she busts out of there, Tiff. She ain't having it. Old boy is talking about roasting her. She busts out of there and immediately they got the cops looking for her. And she does this cat mouse thing up on, you know, in the rafters outside. You know, she's so vulnerable. You think this chick is like, you know, you don't think she's tough, you know? You just like, wow, she's so vulnerable. And she ends up jumping off the building and falls into the cab of Corbin Dallas, who I hadn't introduced earlier, because he gets up in the day and his life is just full of shit. Just
but he's got a beautiful cat.
I know that cat was outside just meowing. I was like,
and he just, I forgot your food.
Hey,
I'll
yeah.
get us Thai food.
Yeah. So he loves his cat, man. You know, he gets dressed. The fingers cause. I guess it's one of his ex-army buddies that, you know, fixes the cab. And you get to know about Corbin Dallas really fast just with him getting up. But he's a burnout. Life is bad. He's an ex-soldier. He got shit all over the house. It's the shittiest one little room apartment I've ever seen in my life, even in the future. I'm just like, damn, it's so dirty. Look at it. My favorite scene in the movie, Tiff. Oh, my God. When he opens the door and the guy's like, give me the cash. Oh, my God. I laugh every time I see it. He's like, come on out, give me the cash. Holy shit. I love that dude. Who is
and
that
he,
fucking
obviously,
guy?
And he has all those guns because, like...
it happens every day.
Right. It happens all the time.
Oh, that dude. He does his little dance with the hat on, Tiff. Oh, God.
Like, I like your hat. He's like, you like my hat?
He's like, take it. I don't need it. Anyway, let me stop.
It's great.
I love
but
that scene.
I do think we... So... You're right about this movie. Lots of stuff's happening at the same time. So we do... I think we were also introduced to Zorg. He had paid the Mangalores to bring him the stones.
Yeah. Well,
in exchange for weapons.
I thought that happened after they found Lulu crash and stuff. But you're right. So you're right. We get introduced to Zorg because he talks about Zorg once he drops off Lulu. Because he's like, yeah, some art dealer.
But they talk about him again.
Oh, does it?
We're introduced to him earlier, yeah.
Is that when he's walking through the hallway and he's like, we need to fire 500,000? And he's like,
yeah,
fire a million.
Fire a million.
Yeah, with that limp. And everybody's scared of this little dude. He's crazy as hell, that's for sure. You know, Gary Oldman with this Louisiana accent just was like genius. He was such a good character. Such a damn good character. And you know... Him and Bruce Willis don't share the stage one time in this whole movie.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, ain't that something? Him or Lulu or nobody. I think just Vito Cornelius and the bad guys, you know? So, you know, he falls down. Back to Lulu. She falls down. She falls in the cab. And then this big old chase happens. The music is thumping. It's great. It's very entertaining. They're going through all the city. And at the same time, they do give you a good chance to see what New York looks like now. Because
right.
It's like, it kind of looks like Star Wars. Like, Star Wars stole this, you know, with the flying cars and everything. And, you know, they race all over the city. She's ends up getting hurt. He takes her to the priest. And, you know, she wakes up after he kisses her and puts the gun to his head, which was
yes,
a trip.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And he asks the priest what something means, and he says, never without my permission.
Yeah, that, you didn't have to ask that dude. You know, she was clearly not having it.
Yeah, he said, that's what I thought.
A little rapey there on top of that, too. You kiss that woman. Right,
but it's great. It's also, like, a good scene, because in a lot of movies, that just happens, and there's no recourse.
Yeah. She wasn't having it. He knew he made a mistake bad. Goes back home, you know, he's saying, hey, you know, I made a mistake. He talks to his buddy Fingers, and he's in love, man. Love at first sight, Tiff. It happens to people.
Yes.
So Vito Cornelius is, he has the fifth element. He's like, everything is saved, you know, right? So, yeah, that's when another one of my favorite things. There's so many. We get a really good look at Zorg, because he's selling these weapons to these warriors, and he does this performance like a used car salesman. It's so good, man. It's so good. Why don't you take us through this?
So the gun has like several different settings, and they have a dummy set up, and he's like, you can do, it's a flamethrower. It's got these needles. My new favorite thing is the ice.
Oh my God. So good.
And he just despises everyone. He thinks everyone's below him. But these aliens are, I guess, especially known for not being that bright. And so like they do, he does mention, he's like, when he leaves, he's like, well, if it were me, or like any smart person would have asked what the red button does on the bottom of the gun. And then they push the red button and they all explode.
I thought it was particularly funny when they were shooting nets and shit on each other, playing with the guns like they was new toys and shit. I was like, look at them. And it's to note that they can change their appearance. So these are his thugs that he works with. But
yes.
I'm looking at the way people are dressed, like those big muscle dudes with them little biker tighty shorts on and stuff. The costume director was Jean-Paul Gaultier. And if you know fashion at all, or, you know, he has cologne and stuff like that, he's very, very famous. He did everything. And the clothing in this whole movie is outrageous. You know, it's all over the place, and it's very unique. And so, onward, man. So, you know, they need to get to Lilu to Flawston. She's learning everything. The priest is taking care of her. They buy her some clothes. All of a sudden, Corbin Dallas wins a ticket to Flawston. This is big paradise cruise ship. And the military comes in, and turns out, you know, some of the generals we saw earlier, that they fixed the whole contest. It's a very charming scene where they're, you know, hey, we fixed the contest. This is going to be your wife, you know. And Bruce Willis, only been out of the service for 6 months, but he's like pissed that they're back in his life already. You know, he said he's lost his wife because of the military. And his mother calls. She's so annoying. The mom, I just can't.
Oh, the mom is the worst. But you know what the best is? You know, I would love to live in the future if the Chinese food people would come to my window.
Right at the window.
And cook me. That was like, fuck yes.
Hey, Mr. Dallas, a fortune for you. And the dude was so nice and charming.
So nice.
Yes, he was.
Like, and then when he was like, well, what does he say? He says, like, at least something. And he was like, that's the way to look at it.
He said, at least he won his lunch, because he bet him his lunch. Yeah.
Oh, that's a positive attitude. It's so good.
Yeah. So that was a very good scene. And then that's when the people come and he wins the tickets. Lilu shows up. With the priest. They come in and everybody's hiding from everybody in this apartment.
Everybody wants. So this is the scene where we realize that there's like three or four parties that want the tickets to Flossed in Paradise because they want the stones.
Oh, this is so good. They hit the priest hits them on the head and they take off. So he takes David. David is such a weasel.
I just feel bad for David. He just wants to be part of this like religious order. I don't think he signed up for it to be like a
hell no. He didn't. He's just like, oh my God, he just hates everything. You know, he's just like, and so he shows up. He's talking about he's Corbin Dallas, and the lady says, okay, you know, and it works. He's cool. Corbin shows up. That's funny, and not all, but many of the stewardess on this thing. Tiff is hot as hell. I just got to say.
God, yeah, man. But they're supposed to be. They're really hot. It's the future has regressed. We are back to like the stewardesses of the 60s.
Oh,
where,
yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah. So Corbin and Lilu gets on his plane. That's so funny, man. When she kept saying multipass, I thought that shit was just so funny. She goes, multipass. So little stuff like that. This movie just makes.
And then
it
eventually,
so
he's like, yes, multipass. Be quiet.
Right. So they get on, and so then who shows up next? The aliens show up, And, yes. You know, the one dude looks like he can barely hold it together, but he's impersonating the dead guy who he thought was Corbin Dallas because the cops threw the dead guy, I guess, in the bag. So he's barely holding it together. Didn't work. The lady scanned him, saw it. And next thing you know, a firefighter blitz. They shooting in the damn thing just ridiculously, the airport. It's just crazy. And they get away. The priest is sitting there drinking. I like the thing. You want some more? The bartender. You want some more? So David didn't get on. So Cornelius says he has to go. So he has to sneak away on his plane. And then the little henchman shows up, who was actually a punk rock singer from Britain at the time. I actually saw him. I think he came on RCO Hall show or something like that. He was terrible. Oh. It was terrible. Oh, God. It was god awful. It was just like, about the noise! About the noise! And I was like, oh, God, this is terrible. Anyway, he gets up there. His boss is pissed. He's blowing him up, Tiff, because he failed him, right? He said, you have an hour to get the stones. God damn, Zork.
Yeah, he's heartless.
Big time.
So there's something I want to talk about that happens.
By all means.
Maybe around this time or potentially earlier in the movie. Mm-hmm. There is an unknown entity that is in charge of Zorg.
Mr. Shadow.
And he calls Zorg, and does his head bleed? What is that?
It's not blood, because when they wipe it, it's like black.
But it looks like, it does look a little bit like blood. Is it just bad fake blood?
I don't know what it is, because it happens to the general, right? And it looks like he's bleeding to death, like his head getting crushed.
I think it is blood. I think it's supposed to be like, if you talk to this person, you have like maybe kind of like a hemorrhage.
Oh, okay. Well, it was happening. He was wiping it off and stuff. He was so scared of him, you know. The only thing that Zorg has been afraid of in this whole movie, you know. So, yeah, he's motivated. So he gets up on his way to go to Flosston. Now, Tiff, when they get to Flosston, and oh, my God, not even get to Flosston. We're on a boat and on a plane. And we get to introduce to Ruby Rod. Holy shit. I wasn't ready for this back in the day, Tiff. And it makes me laugh to this day. When he just comes, he is so animated. And that suit. And what the hell is he doing? He's gender bending. He said that he like channeled Michael Jackson, Prince, all kind of like people to come up with that role. And you can, yes. You can see it. You know, oh my God. And those, his entourage, the whole thing works, Tiff.
I love to go,
you know, so Corbin can't stand his ass, you know, quickly. He can't stand him. But this whole performance, the lollum lolly, lickum lolly, he just kills it, Tiff. He chews up the scene. Chris Tucker, bravo, one of your best things you ever did in your life. I actually remember him for that role more than anything. Even Rush Hour. I love
it. I do love him in this movie.
Oh my God, it's so good. And so he chokes him out almost, you know, leave me alone, he basically tell him. And he gets to the hotel. Now this introduction of Flosston, Tiff, do it make you feel good like it make me feel good when they get there and they got the music going, boom, 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 and they, you know, putting lays on everybody. I'm like, God, I want to go there so bad. It's
I know, I want like I want to get away.
I know. It makes me feel so welcome, this little scene and the music they sing.
And it's so fancy.
Oh, my God. Eat away, away. Kumbaya. I'm like, oh, God, I want to go. Oh, my goodness. So the hotel is so slick. The lady's talking about, you know, his itinerary. And she has all the tuxedos. When she says Ruby Rod, she's all in love with him and stuff.
Yeah, because she's like, she has an accent. So she's like, la, ba, ma, ba, na. And then she's like, Ruby Rod.
Right, just like him and stuff. And he's just so irritated. But the look on Bruce Willis's face when she opens up the closet and has all the suits, it's a lot going on in this movie. They do such a good job. I think this was back when Bruce Willis was actually trying to act, you know, and not just, you know. It just made me feel satisfied. Like, man, I would feel really great. It's just one less thing you have to worry about. And that's what she showed in that moment. So now we back with, we get back with Ruby, right?
Yes.
They're going to the opera.
Time for the show.
And that dress, pants, whatever the hell he was wearing, what the hell was that? And it's so funny because the entourage, they match colors.
Yes.
And so he does it again. He chews up the scene. It's beautiful, Tiff. And he goes through the room showing the different people. And that's really, really well done by the director. I was like, wow, you're really getting to know a bunch of characters that don't mean anything, but it's pretty cool. It's like world building. So then we get introduced to the diva. You know, she's part of the conspiracy. She tells Lulu that she's going to bring in the stones after the performance. She goes and performs. She comes out. She's a big alien, about 8 foot tall, with kind of looking like one of the dancers in Star Wars. And mm-hmm. she does this performance. Now, just so you know, I didn't know what the hell that thing was. I didn't know if it was a man because of the height. For mm-hmm. years and years and years, I thought it was a big dude, you know, and mm-hmm. Just dressed like a woman, but it wasn't. It's actually a woman, and because the hands were really big. But this woman had gargantuan hands. Those aren't prosthetics. Those are her hands. It was Luc Besson's girlfriend.
Oh, well, good for her.
Well, it was a trip because she's a French lady, and she was like, she didn't want to be in this movie. She's like, I don't think lovers should, you know, she's very French. I don't think lovers should work together. And they hired a lady, you know. And the lady was, a big blonde bombshell, and she was supposed to show up, but she didn't show up for the gig. And when it was time, they couldn't reach the manager or the lady. And so she said, look, if she don't show up on a day of shooting, I'll do it. Guess what? The lady didn't show up. She did it. And she did the performance. She lip-synced the whole thing. It's a one of the best memorable things in the movie is that goddamn song. I mean,
yes.
It's so, so good. Never before have you ever heard opera then mixed with pop like that. It's just, you just like, at the end. Now, here's something really interesting about this scene. Because they took this lady, dressed her up like that, and took her to the Opry. And they filled it with all the people. That's a live shot. Only mm-hmm. thing they did different is they shot it again behind the window. So you can see the big earth, you know, behind it. But when they did this, the reaction of the crowd was organic. They never saw it before. They didn't know what they was going to see. They told them, you know, hey, you guys are in for a treat. Boom. You know, react naturally as you would. So yeah. When you see it at the end, when people, like, especially the star, Bruce Willis, everybody just, like, are floored and stand up like, oh, my God, it's the best thing I've ever heard. That was real. I was like, wow.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was real cool because it is a hell of a performance. So during this performance, Tiff, the Warriors are on board and they attack. So during the performance with the heavy drums, Lulu was beating the shit out of all the Warriors.
So cool. It's so cool that this is like the juxtaposition between the scenes is really good.
It's that roundabout storytelling that he does. One thing leads to another and comes back and keeps going in circle. It's pretty cool for this movie. But she gets taken out at the end, Tiff. You know, Zorik shows up. So what's going on now?
So she gets killed, and then all the chaos like ensues. Like people are running everywhere.
Well, she don't get killed,
and
she gets shot. She don't get killed.
Yes. And Corbin pulls her off the stage because he was trying to save her. And then
You're talking about the diva gets killed. Yes, the diva gets killed. Yes, yes.
So, I'm sorry, Lulu gets shot.
Lulu gets shot.
She's in the air, ducks, and she's trying to escape, but she's been shot.
Right.
But yes, then the diva says, you know, I have the stones, they're in me.
Yeah, and nothing sells this whole thing. It's a great performance by this unknown actress, you know, the girlfriend. But the whole thing with Chris Tucker narrating and reacting with this action scene.
Somebody come get me. I'm in the front row.
Oh my God. He is such a coward, but I applaud him because he hung in there because in the middle of this thing, he turns into like a news reporter, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, this is amazing. This is amazing. I'm going to go see what I can see, you know. And he just like, he doesn't quit, you know, even though he's a coward, you know. He doesn't quit. And the whole thing with the gun and this ain't me, what I do, all the stuttering. It's so fluid and real and so funny. I was cracking up the whole goddamn time.
I do think one of my favorites, so he gets the stones and they have a bunch of fight scenes with the Mangalores.
Right.
But one of my favorite scenes is when there's like a kind of a Mozart type guy,
Ray Thunderball.
yeah. And then he's deaf, and so he, and that, not to disparage anyone, he just can't hear, and so he asks him, give me the gun, and he's like, okay, and he just throws him those two pool balls
and thinks he did something right,
and he's just using the thumbs up, and I love it because there's nothing. He's not making fun of anyone. It's not, like, cruel. Because even Bruce Willis is like, all right.
Because Ruby said he announced that he's so stoned out that he don't even know what day of the week it is. You know, he was like, he'll miss the whole thing because he's stoned out. You know, so he's supposed to be like a dope head, you know, just on another planet the whole time. So, yeah, this explosions, gunshots, fighting. He fights his way through. I love when he goes down and talk about, do you mind if I negotiate? And he, you know, and the radio, the whole galaxy is listening to this. The president's listening to this. He's commenting and stuff. It's hilarious. He shoots the Mangalore. Anybody else want to negotiate? And, you know, just all the banter, you know, where did he learn to negotiate like that? It's so good. It's so good. Things calm down for a minute. Movie has been on 100 miles per hour. Lilu is hurt. He finds her, grabs her, and then now it's a bomb.
Yes, so Zorg has escaped to his spacecraft with the stones.
With nothing.
Well, we think with the stones. We don't know. He thinks with the stones, yeah, anyway.
He opens them and it's nothing. He has to go back.
Yes.
And another bomb, you know. So everybody's getting off because the bomb detector goes off. And it's chaos. It's great. I love it. Bruce Willis and, Corbin Dallas and his crew was Vito Cornelius, Lilu, and Ruby. I don't know how Ruby ended up with them, but he just stayed with them, right? And they get off the ship. Zora goes back to the ship as they're getting off because he don't have the stones. And then the Mangalore says, hey, you know, for the honor, and has their own bomb. And that one little thing blew the whole ship up, Tiff. Damn. Wow. So they get away. Now they have to, you know, the entity is on its way to Earth. They only got a few minutes, you know. They got, what, 2 hours, he said.
Well, 2 hours, but they need to get to Earth.
Yeah, he says, hour 57 minutes. He said, I'll call you back in 2 hours. So they go. Now, I was tripping on this part because they were doing a lot of, like, catching up the audience at this time, you know, on the ship, you know. And Ruby was asleep. I noticed last night, I was, oh, he was asleep this whole time. That's why he was acting so clueless and stuff when they got up the next day. And, you know, he was like, you know, what I do, you know. And so they get to the temple. David got it all set up, and they figure out the stones that you got to blow on the stones. You got to light.
So this is my favorite, one of my favorite things, is because they can't figure out how to activate the stones.
Mine is broken.
and then the guy, this is such a me move. So David is just so, he's just like, we're going to die. And he's just like,
right.
And the opens a little bit. It's like, what did you do? And he reenacts what he did, but doesn't sigh.
Until
he sighs again. And right. they realize, oh, it's like, because Lilu had said, you know, fire burns.
And she's dying. Blows. She got bullet holes in her. And I'm like, no medic or nothing, right?
Yes.
So she's depressed at this point because she Googled war and saw the horrors of war. And you know, those scenes, no matter how many times I see them in my life, they almost bring me to tears every time I see it. You know, those are things that you see in a lot of movies, you know, when they talk about destruction and stuff. And it's just like, God, it's so heavy. So, you know, they figure out the stones. So they got them lit up. And he has to, Lilu, she's giving up. She don't think humanity is worth saving because all we do is destroy. And start talking about this better words than V. So anyway, he ends up telling her he loves her. And that's all she needed to hear to open up her big mouth and shoot the ball out of the sky and stop it just dead, Tiff.
Yes. The fifth element is love.
Yes. So that works out, man. So it stops. Everybody's relieved. And then they're going to... I like the scene when the president shows up to meet his heroes and they're screwing. The mama calls. Yes. You know, I love what he... First, I would like to thank you. You're a shining example. And, you know, she just starts... The president is dumb and he doesn't sound like that. You know, it's just like no respect for the politician, man. It was so funny, man. It was so funny.
They're
tubing. Yeah, yeah.
They're tubing it.
It sure was. I like what the dude, he looks at it, he puts his back to it, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not ready and stuff. He's like, everything with the president is like, you got 5 seconds. You got 30 seconds, you know. So he says 19 more meetings after this. God damn, you know. So, and I wonder what he's president of. The Earth or the galaxy, you know? What is that?
The United, like, Federation of something.
So, half the shit in the galaxy, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like in Futurama, where he's the president of Earth.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. United, the president of the Federated Territories.
Yes. So, Tiff, I love this movie, man. I watched it, like, last night, and it was, like, for the first time, you know?
Well, it's crazy because... If I got off this call right now and we were going to watch, and somebody was like, you want to watch Fifth Element? I'd be like,
yep. Right. Yeah, sure. No problem. Yeah, I love this movie. So I think that's it, man. We finally got a chance to do one of the ones we've been wanting to do on the show forever, man. So I'm the host of Fans of Patrol. My name is Montego Bradley. With me is the sensitive one herself, Miss Tifflebot. Say goodbye to the people, Tiff.
It's been a midweek pleasure.
Indeed. We'll be back this weekend to give you all the lowdown and the hoedown. And that's going to do it. So until next week, man, we will be
on patrol.